We have some folks show up. That's great. We do not have anybody signed up for public speaking, I don't think. I didn't see any names on there, so. Okay. So we can get through the public comment part rather quickly. Thank you.
yeah.
From there. All right, so then we'll take administrative action, do a roll call here. It has been requested that we announce the date and the time we're starting. When we do the roll call for folks that listen on the audio and not sure, I guess they're not sure which meeting they're listening to or what date they're listening to, although I think it would be filed under that date and,
yeah, it is,
and
but
time, but
it doesn't hurt, right?
Do that, so we can state that this is the Clark County Parks Advisory Board meeting, monthly meeting, May the 10th. Let's say 10th. Yeah, May 10th at noon. We'll call it high noon. And I'll start with myself, Jay Chester, co-chair.
Yes, ma'am. Yep. Barbara Anderson, Pat.
Try to catch everybody with their mouths full.
Joe Pounder, Green Public Schools. Dave Weston, Pat. Kevin Tyler, Clark County Public Works.
Kelsey Potter, Pam.
And then, you want to, Megan?
Megan Sturps.
All right. And then, Laura, are you official, ex officio, or how? Do you want to let people know you're here? I guess the way to say that.
Laura, I'll get Clark County Park.
All right. Okay. Now, there's been a discussion about the advertising. We've had some challenges with the advertising of the meeting. It is our understanding, and we can ask legal interpretation, but that this is a legal meeting, public meeting, because it was advertised and on our website. Is that correct? Okay, usually we have it advertised through the Columbian and in the Columbian. Their statement was they lost our email. It was buried under some other emails and didn't get it to them. This is the I don't know about the first time. This time is what we saw under the statement. So we're going to work through that a little bit and maybe get our announcement in earlier. Or work through that so that we can get in the Columbian, because I think there's some...
I think Megan's here. Don't we have to be publicly noticed in the paper?
It has to be. I don't know that it has to be in the paper.
You don't know that it has to be in the paper?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was always told it did.
So some of the other advisory boards to the county, like the Planning Commission... the Planning Commission might have a little bit different rules, but like our Noxious Weed Control Board, we will, at the very beginning of the year, put something in the newspaper about when the meetings are throughout the course of the year, and then make sure that they're on the website. And that is sufficient for making sure that it's noticed. Typically with the newspaper, if you definitely want something published, you have to pay for it to be published. The approach that has been taken with Parks Advisory Board is to do a news release, and then newspapers can pick that up or not pick that up. I think they're obligated to pick up things because of the Open Public Meetings Act, but they know what it is.
Well, I know when we went through our training for the neighborhood groups, because I used to have the North Salmon Creek Neighborhood Association, one of the things Holly Gaya really reinforced was that if we didn't get it publicly noticed, that it was not a legal meeting.
Right.
And so that's just where I got my interpretation.
Thankfully, publicly noticed them. It's on the website.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's an established meeting.
Well, yeah, that's a definition of a public
meeting. Yeah. Well, I thought it was really interesting
was
with
the
neighborhoods
website.
Because we send out a newsletter to every address in the in that area. That should have been public notice enough, I would have thought. But
I think moving...
But that's okay. I'm good with this.
Moving forward, what we could do
is
all of the meeting dates on the website for the whole year. We know when they are.
Yeah.
And they so those, if those have been on the website for the whole year, then that's a good thing. We've started too with our Noxious Weed Control Board, push out some social media, next door, things of that nature. We could do that.
Yeah. Well, I think we were doing we do that through our Facebook.
I missed this month since I was unconscious, but yeah, I do.
I almost put it there when I did the plant sale.
I do try to do it like the Monday before. I think this is the first one I did the Monday before.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the bottom line is that if someone is interested and is motivated to find us, they will find us.
They can find
us. That's true.
But so, in the future, are we not going to send these?
No, I think we will still do that. Okay. We will still, before 2 weeks before the meeting, we'll push that out in a similar fashion. We got some pointers from the newspaper about who to include on that distribution.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll make sure that our, as we... when we hire a new communications person for Public Works, make sure that they're included in that release.
Okay, well then, good. All right. So, with that, if everybody is in belief that we and have a public meeting, then we need to accept our March and April meeting minutes. So, do I have a...
Nothing.
Everybody look at those and take a minute. I know if everybody reviews the agenda and looks through all the meeting notes before they come every month. But take a minute to refresh yourself.
I'll move to accept as presented.
All right.
I'll second it.
Are we doing both or one at a time?
Both.
Let's do both.
That's why I said as presented.
All right, so it's moved and seconded. All those in favor, or any more debate? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? All right. And as usual, the volunteer hours, please get those in. And that way Mr. Spencer can make sure he knows that he's performed his volunteer hours and get those documented. So the record needs to reflect that Mr. Spencer is now here. With his bright, shining face, always a smile on.
All of that needs to be in the record.
All that needs to be in the record. Well, we need to have somebody smiling. I mean, you know, let it know. All right, so we'll move on to unfinished business. The PBRS update says Laura and Kevin.
There is some.
There is, Will.
Some stuff to look at.
Is it someplace else, and you have to keep getting up.
And Laura's going to take the lead on this one because she actually attended the meeting. I did not.
So it's a little bit hard to see. I think Megan printed out copies for you. So these are some example comparisons of some properties that were selected by the assessor's office to provide. Some scoring with the scoring that you all worked on, or most of you worked on in March, in the meeting where Kevin took the lead. We sent that on to the assessor's office, and so they applied those scores to these properties. And in doing so, the top portion is, I believe, the King County.
Do we have this in our packet?
I thought that you did.
I don't see it, and I can't quite make it out there.
It's right here.
Oh.
Thank you, Megan. So the top is using the King County evaluation schedule, and then the bottom is the one that the assessor's office is proposing for Clark County. And so then the scoring is a little bit different. And so what our hope is that in looking at this, that you can tell us if you're okay with the scoring as presented, if you feel like we need to relook at the categories and adjust scoring, we can look at that as well. So again, it's just some example properties and just for privacy issues, the names of the landowners and the anything that identified the property has been removed. You'll see that on some of these properties that they actually fell into a few different categories. Property one received some scoring from All Stream Habitat, Wetlands Category 2, and Priority Habitat. They also have some forestry, Priority Oak on that property, and some biodiversity. And with the scoring, they received 25 points altogether, which gave them 80% off reduction using the King County evaluation, and down below with the Clark County at 75%. As you go across, you can see that their current open space, what they're paying for taxes, and then what they would pay with the change if this was to move forward, and the difference, the tax increase that it would put on that landowner.
That was one of my questions. So this tax increase, the last column,
mm-hmm.
is that on the landowner or is that for the...
That's on the actual landowner. That's
so it's
the
increased tax to him.
For them, yeah.
Well, it's
yeah.
a significant one. Mm-hmm. Like, why would anyone want to do this? No one would want to, right? No.
So, on the upside, if they stayed in the program, it would still reduce their taxes.
In the long run?
It can. So, instead of paying all of their taxes, like backing out of the program and paying 100%,
Yeah, so it's still one quarter of what it was.
Right, it's not near the 100% mark as it was, but now so it's at 80%, and so it's less.
If you take this example, the original land value, market value, would be $4.7 million. And if it didn't have current use at all, the taxes they would pay are about $49,000 per year. So if you look at it, in the current use program in 2018, they would pay $1,700 in taxes. If we go with this public benefit rating system, based on what they would qualify for, their tax benefit would be only $12,000, which increases their taxes on an annual basis by $10,000 compared to the current use system that they're in right now. So, yeah, it's a good question. Who would?
So, was the part of the intents of this system to increase the tax rates over the current system? Because all the options here show an increase with no.
No, that's not. The intent is. Out. The intent is. My understanding of the intent from the assessor's office is flexibility.
Okay.
To provide for more ways that we can prioritize open space in the county.
There's, I dropped in another overview. So in, I think it says, there you go. So the categories that we have currently in our open space taxation are on the top. And so on the bottom are the proposed. They're different. So soil conservation could now go into farm conservation as well as I think that's habitat there. It's really blurry, sorry. So there are less categories but more options.
And what I recommended to the assessor's office with this figure is, if you just look at this figure, it looks like not much changes, right? There's seven or eight boxes on the top and there's six boxes on the bottom, so how is that more flexibility? What they don't show is that under each one of those categories on the bottom, parks and recreation or critical habitat, there's 5 or 10 different choices that could potentially get you into the program. So if you look across the entire county and we look at individual property owners, their taxes might change and go up. But other property owners that don't currently qualify for the program might be then eligible for the program. And they might be eligible in areas that were never previously available for, like, some of the recreational opportunities that we looked at. So, countywide, it may be a wash in terms of taxes because we're talking about tax deferral, and so the amount of tax that the county doesn't, that they collect doesn't change, it just gets redistributed, right? So there might be more or less properties to redistribute to.
I never thought I'd see the day where King County is, in essence, a cheaper place to live based on these taxes.
Right.
Yeah. Can we go back to the table again?
So my concern is, if when you're making legislation, first do no harm.
Yeah.
And this harms people. I recognize that in some situations somebody's going to take it, but at least with this set of examples, those are some pretty significant increases.
I think it'd be helpful if they give us an example of properties that are in the program,
right?
To see the other side of it as well.
Yeah.
Because this doesn't tell us that.
Yeah.
And we also don't know if there are possibilities for grandfathering people that are in the system. As long as they stay in the system, their tax stays the same. If they ever have to come out or they want to reapply some new new category, then it would change.
These lands are lands that we truly want to protect.
Correct.
And as such, I agree with John that this doesn't feel like it's protecting them when you're penalizing.
But this is where we were talking about public access versus semi-private or private access, all the same tax exemption. So is that right?
Yeah.
So
basically, I think what it's coming down to is our example isn't deep enough to really know whether we're...
Yeah,
I'd like to see a couple more examples, like you said, of properties that are not in there right now, but would be now. What's the impact? Because one of the aspects I'm worried about is we're going from a tax deferral system to a tax redistribution. Because the taxes that aren't paid here are paid by others. So I want to, as John said, do no harm, but, you know, are we shifting the taxes to people that, you know, I mean, somebody may not be in this at all, and now they have to pay even more taxes because somebody else's property is in the reserve side.
Right. That's been my sticking point since we started this discussion, to me, at least on the park side, it values people who have large swaths of land, great views, great access points to things. So to me, it was looking like maybe it could be a tax break for wealthier people, and then the deferral or the redistribution would be put upon people like me who live on half an acre, quarter of an acre, and I'm looking at you because you're a land if that was one of my concerns to begin with, is it's kind of just redistribution. But this doesn't really seem to benefit anyone, or at least these numbers don't.
I mean, it's still benefiting them.
Well,
yeah.
And I get it. I mean, and as the comp plan, we're trying to protect wetland areas, stream riparian.
Oh, yeah.
The oak growth. And in a way, this would be an incentive to protect those items.
That's true.
And there's also that level where, you know, take that first example, could that person be incentivized to open up his or her land to more public access and bring this number back down to where it was? That would be a case where the system's really working well.
Yeah, they only need 10 more points.
If you remember, we also wanted to take out the self-development or private development, private development, and leave the public maintenance there because we don't have standards. We wanted to make sure we had the right standards and that kind of stuff. So I think if we could see a couple more examples, a little broader base, land that's not in there currently or not currently acceptable, and then it would be under this program. And then the overall taxes, I still don't know if anybody's done a projection on what this will be on the overall tax landscape.
I don't think so. They have.
Okay.
This was the first effort to apply the new categories to some properties that we know are in current use. So it's a very small window of what this new system would do. And so the assessor's office has a big task ahead of them of, I think, analyzing some of those things.
Yeah, I guess that was another question of mine, is what is the next step? What are the next steps?
I spoke with one of the managers in the assessor's office. I said the deputy assessor earlier this week, Michael Fish, and he suggested that they're targeting a work session with council towards the end of summer, likely in August. Mm-hmm. Because with the public benefit rating system, the direction from council was to look at the feasibility of such a program. And that's all that this is
at
this point.
Right.
So I don't think that there's any action needed on our part other than to provide them input. Yeah. So what I will do is make sure that they have access to the minutes or the audio from today so they can listen and hear some of the things that you guys are asking questions about, because that's what council will ask questions about. That's what other people will ask questions about. The more that they can be prepared for a work session with council, the better. And then we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah, well, within that, so they'll have this information. You know, one of the things that comes to mind is within the HOA that I used to live in, they have the Whipple Creek. We're the only HOA in Clark County that's responsible for maintaining this area. We tried to get out of it, but you guys said we can't even walk back there. So when it comes to allowing public access to it to reduce the taxes, right now I think it's got zero taxes on it because of what it is. If we turned around and under this system, suddenly they're stuck with, say, $10,000 worth of taxes on it. There's an inequity here that I think needs to be considered. Because along with that, when it looks like this is something to increase taxes, but fails to protect what it was intended to protect, there's an incongruity.
Yeah, and like I said in our agenda planning meeting, before this, once it kind of gets to the point where we can't discuss anymore, I do want our board to vote on if we think this is a good idea for parks, rec, and open space or not. Because
today?
Not today.
Oh,
when
good.
We get towards the very end, Laura's got no more info for us, because I think we should have a vote on do we think this is good for parks and open space, or do we, and the citizens of Clark County, or do we not? Because I think, I would feel...
Well, I think a public benefit system is important to have. I support that in its concept.
Yeah.
But the way this is looking, it feels uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Do we want to entertain a question from...
Yeah, I was just curious. Is this designed, the intent designed to be a replacement for the current open space zoning system, or is it to be an overlay?
It would replace the current use open space category. So there's different categories of current use timberland, current use farm and ag, and current use open space. It's just open space that would be replaced by it.
My feeling would be that if the public benefit system was designed to be an overlay, that would actually be a lot better approach, because then it could be applied to any property where you could overlay an additional public benefit and give them a discount based on that.
Yeah. I don't know if that's possible under the RCWs or not, but the assessor can hear that comment and see if they can look into it.
Okay.
When we first started with the PBRS, I wasn't involved in Thank you, Kevin, for explaining that. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that very much. One of the questions that were asked is, why are we even studying this? And their comments were, based on the challenges the citizens brought forward to council in 2017, they suggested forming the PBRS committee. So they formed that to start looking at it, to see if it was right for the county. And through that, it says it allows flexibility to address unique land situations, provides tax options for those who no longer qualify for other programs, and empowers the community to further conserve. And I think part of that was the farm conservation conversations, whereas if they wanted to go into farm conservation, were there penalties for coming back out?
Yeah, there's 7 years of
there,
tax.
Yeah, so okay. Currently, if you qualify for farm and agriculture, and then you no longer meet those criteria, you're not producing agriculture anymore, you're not producing enough agriculture, you're not making enough money, you can get kicked out of the program.
Yeah.
And if you do, then you have to pay the back taxes. So some of the categories that are available may not fit exactly in open space for those situations. We've had people come out of farm and ag and go into soil conservation or stream protection, but sometimes they don't fit one of the categories. I spoke with a landowner this week who bought 10 acres that was in the program, wants to develop a house on 1 acre of it, so now they have 9 acres, they don't qualify for the program anymore. So they have a $14,000 tax bill that's staring them down. So those are the kind of situations where if we can provide flexibility and still protect the resource, then I think that's what the assessor's office was looking at.
There were some citizens that come to the meeting, and you know, a gentleman say he needed to retire or for some reason could no longer farm his land at all. And then the children would potentially take over. Allowing them to go into farm conservation also provides a way to buy them time to decide what they're going to do with the land. The hope is that it will stay in open space and that it won't be developed, but it helps the family, especially if, say, that farmer passed away, it gives them time to mourn and go through the process without penalty. So those are part of the conversations that we've had at the meetings. So, you know, on that side, you can see that it's beneficial. But then when you're looking at the bottom line on people who are in the program, if they don't allow them to be grandfathered in, then yeah, their taxes increase. So what I'm hearing from you is that you're really concerned about that.
I want to see both sides.
Okay.
I think that's the key, is both sides, and just, you know, I mean,
yeah, more info.
If it's worry and concern about making a decision, I think, you know, that's easier to solve than trying to revamp the whole system. Mm-hmm. The other side of the coin is, if we're trying to get more land involved and more landowners to preserve, then, you know, we do need to change the system. So.
And if we're raising those questions now, we know that council will do that. So it's good for them to hear these comments and concerns. We raised some of the same concerns during the meeting. Especially, there were a couple of properties I was concerned about that they would no longer provide the recreation benefit if they felt like they were getting hit too hard with taxes. So, thank you very much.
Okay.
Did you have any other questions?
Anybody else? You okay?
I'm
good. Okay. Okay. I think we're good.
We'll keep you posted.
Move on.
Yeah.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks.
Jay, just so you're aware, I need to leave early today, so if there's anything of higher priority that you'd want my input.
Well, I think we're coming up to the one vote we have, and we'll just open that up for right now and go on to the City of Vancouver 5th cross boundary proposal.
Kevin can help me out with this.
Yeah. So. I can kick you guys off if you want. Okay.
That'd be great.
So the city is proposing what they're calling a park overlay, a change to their park service overlay areas. And our, and so we had Monica Tupperville here to present that to you. And the idea basically is that they have the ability to spend their own park impact fees outside of city limits, so within county jurisdiction, within a half, 1.5 miles of the city limits. So it provides them more flexibility in meeting their service needs. So what I did was go to the City of Vancouver's Parks and Recreation Advisory Commission website and found their November 14 meeting minutes. That's when they discussed this, and PRAC made a recommendation to move it forward. And so from that meeting, I downloaded the pertinent information, and it includes, and you have copies of these, the PIF Overlay Service Area Amendment Request, so that's the staff report from Julie Hannon. PIF Overlay Service Area Code Change to the Vancouver Municipal Code. The PIF Technical Document, so changes to their PIF Technical Document, and then City-County CAMAS Overlay Agreement, so what a potential agreement between the parties might look like. In the staff report, there's discussion about why this is a good idea, highlight some things. It allows system improvements to be located partly or entirely outside city limits when they serve established park districts. Again, proposes an interagency agreement between the county and City of CAMAS to partner, where feasible, to meet the recreational demands of our citizens for parks, trails, and open space. They're highlighting notable, what they call notable park service area gaps that are particularly concentrated along common jurisdictional boundaries between Clark County and the City of CAMAS and the City of Vancouver in the east-northeast area of Vancouver. It's kind of in that. And they've also highlighted community parks as the priority, not necessarily neighborhood parks. And if they did pursue neighborhood park acquisitions, the overlay would be limited to 0.5 mile from the city boundary so that it meets that walkable neighborhood concept. They have some advantages of why this is a good thing. They have no disadvantages listed for whatever reason. That's the information I was able to find at this point. Amanda and I talked about it, and she's here. Mostly her role is to advise the county, and essentially she would be looking at the agreement to make sure that it's legal and that it doesn't put us in a risky situation. Questions? Thoughts?
It's like a win-win. You don't trust?
You said I don't trust. I don't. Be honest with you.
Okay.
I think, you know, I got a couple of technical questions. One is, if they incorporate this land into their calculations of their impact fee and everything else, do we get to put that in our calculation? Because Steve and others are after us because we're not counting as much land as they think we should.
They are counting it and we aren't. It's still our land.
I know. That's I'm just making sure that we can.
Well, so I think we answered that.
So your question would be, how does it apply to the park impact fee formula?
For us, the county, because if they're doing the work and they do, you know, they don't own the land, but they've got that land in their overlay,
right,
park overlay area, they have every right to claim that as theirs.
They do.
So do we have a right to claim that as ours?
I don't think
in terms of calculating the
our impact fee, because remember, DEEB is after us because we're not including as much as we should. And so I'm a little concerned about that visual aspect, if nothing else.
And you're saying you would prefer to be able to count?
I'd like for us to be able to count for it, too.
Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, just...
Well, I guess that didn't even come into play, because when we discussed it last week, we asked about the maintenance, ongoing maintenance and support.
Sure,
and
sure.
Such, and they acknowledged that it was still our land.
Right.
And so I guess maybe you're bringing up a question I hadn't considered that they would even ask for.
Well, there again, it's a perception, and talking to Deeb and talking to other developers, you know, they want us to lower our impact fees.
Sure.
And they want to, and I'm actually glad we got City of Vancouver's impact fee policy here, because I want to look through it, because they got some parts in there that we may want to capture. But I'm just concerned of the optics of, well, there's the county giving away property they can't develop, quote unquote. It's just the perception, and the actual end of the calculation through there. I also, you use the word trust, and there's a reason they're doing this. I don't understand the reason of why they're doing this. I mean, they're talking about, and here it's legally described as, because if they reach a situation in an area where they can't find a decent park, they want to be able to go outside on their overlay and do that. It's, you know, extraterritorial jurisdiction, you know, type thing in the city. I don't know that it's not a precursor for annexation, to be honest with you.
Well, and it's hard to say what that looks like. But to address something that you just said, Kelsey, the agreement and the discussion in here suggests that partners would look to adopt similar policies in their own jurisdiction. So if the City of Vancouver can do it on our side, then we would potentially be able to do it on their side of the line.
So
if we adopted our own similar policy.
But so I just don't understand. There's not that much land left available. So I don't know
there isn't in Vancouver at all.
Right.
Well, and I think that's part of
their issue.
None in Vancouver, and there are a few spots.
Yeah, where it would service their people.
But where their real service needs are south, not north. That's the part, really, that I don't get.
Yeah.
But it doesn't extend into the north. What? He said it goes a mile and a half outside their
boundaries. I would assume that's all boundaries, all the way around. So, I mean...
Not that you can go miles the river.
And they've identified overlays in basically in PIF, what they call PIF districts B and C. Yeah. They're not really targeting A.
Yeah. I guess we would have to pursue your question to bring better comfort on that, but I guess I'm kind of looking at it that, you know, I go down and use the city parks all the time and out to Camas. I mean, our residents don't really care. And if what we end up with is they want to develop some land that we've got that we don't have the money to develop yet, right, our people are going to gain the benefit of that.
The problem is I have a bad taste in my mouth in the city parks right now. And I see this as I personally feel that they like to spend money on properties. And I don't see any parks being built. Except, I mean, waterfront, its own thing. And they're looking to buy more land on the outskirts when they're skipping properties inside that I'd like to see built.
Well, they're actually not. They're not buying the land. They're actually
they're
just
developing it.
Yeah.
They're just
but it has the same result as you're talking about. Why wouldn't they use that money to do interior to Vancouver? And I understand there's two parks that are locked up and chained right now.
Yeah,
the playground.
So I must be misinterpreting. So then they're not buying property, we're buying property, and then they're developing it outside of this fringe?
Yep. So what I can garner from this information is that they are opening up flexibility to use their PIF dollars, which would be acquisition or development,
right?
Okay, within that 1.5 miles, so it's both, I believe.
I think it's both, yeah, from what I've read.
And the other thing that they're focusing on is, I was looking through notes of a more recent meeting, trying to find this information, that I came across some work that they're doing to increase their PIF.
They're raising their rates.
Raising their rates. Look pretty substantial to me.
They're right around 6%.
With the idea of developing some of those parks that they haven't developed.
Right.
There's a whole list of parks, that, and then redoing playground equipment in a lot of parks, like
they
the
need
ones
to
that
do
are
that.
Closed right now. So.
Yeah.
So I guess back to Jay's point, I want to understand. So when you're looking at your PIF rates, you have X acres in your district or in your jurisdiction as the county, and you have X acres as the city. So like Jay's saying, does that mean they're going to add 200 acres to theirs, and then we add 200, and then everyone's double dipping on this demand that's really not supposed to be double dipped on? That right there seems like
that makes you just nervous. I mean, at how it's going to roll.
But you can say your rate should be higher, and the city says their rate should be higher because you're both counting the same 1.5 mile zone.
Right. Does anyone recall? Remember when they came and asked us for the $250,000 for the Fenton property? Is the Fenton property in this overlay area?
I think it is.
Because it was right on our boundary.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I swear Monica said every PIP dollar going into that.
She did.
Into that district is going to the Fenton property. Every single dollar.
Until they pay that off.
Until they pay it off. So what I'm confused about is why are we doing this overlay when they have this huge property they have to pay off? They're still not going to, even if we say, yes, this is okay with us, what are they going to go acquire or build in the meantime when they have this 40-acre park property?
Only for that district, though. They've still got B.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. But it's like, it's pretty much I feel if we do this, it's just to fund that one property, essentially.
I don't know either.
This would just give them the ability to do this.
Correct.
You would still have to agree.
Yeah,
my understanding is they still would have to come to us with a memorandum of understanding. We both groups would have to agree to that.
Yeah, and each property would be individually
looked at,
assessed. And I guess,
are we going to get political pressure though if we say we don't want to do, like they have this property and we don't want to do it? I mean, are we going to get politically squeezed?
There's always that opportunity, but I guess within this whole big thing, I've been around maybe too long, and
40 years.
I want to get the information we need to ensure that we're protecting everyone and that it is a win-win. But within that, my concern is we're starting to work together again, and collaboration and partnerships truly are the most advantageous for everyone in Clark County. So I don't want to read into this concerns that may not be there, but it's important to eliminate and ensure that you're concerned.
So,
because I agree on the counting and the calculation of PIF. It's important that that's clearly defined within the agreement.
So I would like to make a proposal that we delay the vote on this until we get more information. And we can ask Molly or Monica.
I'm surprised she's not here.
I mean, the easy answer is that they count to their boundary and we count to our boundary, and that's how PIFs are counted.
And I guess I naively thought that that's what it was.
Solution, because
it's still our property.
It's awfully shady, but.
Well, I don't know that it's not. I mean, I have several conspiracy theories on a lot of events, so
at least you own that, Jay.
Yeah, you're asking a basic question, and it's totally fair to ask.
Yes.
Assuming the answer makes sense, I tend to agree with Barbara if this results in more parks. Done.
Well, I agree too.
Go back to buying property and then not building parks.
I'm still not, because I feel like the county's doing their job on this outer perimeter, purchasing the lands that need to be purchased.
Right. Yes.
When they annex, they get those, their coverage areas taken care of. I believe they should be focusing on the inside portions of the city of Vancouver that need parks. And it's expensive. I get that.
And you own property specifically, right, that you've been waiting for them to build near your neighborhood.
There's one.
And so that's the thing.
Actually, there's two.
I'm torn, honestly, but I'm a little bit with Dave. Like, you promised your citizens these parks over here, so why are you reaching into county land to buy more land to build parks? Like, to make a backlog of parks when you have one.
I just feel like just because it's cheaper to buy in the county than downtown or wherever they need, they're showing these gaps.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that is what it is, and your TIFs
should recognize. Did I misunderstand? Are they looking to buy land?
Yes.
They're going to have to. I mean, otherwise, we're going to buy land and they're going to develop it or something. I mean, that's not a possibility. But
the likelihood is not that we're going to buy a piece of property and they're going to come out and develop it for us.
Under funding, it says the City of Vancouver anticipates taking the lead in acquiring park capital facilities.
Number five, did you say?
Facility located to the Park Service Area Overlay. And then
taking the lead.
On to say, like, if we want to share in the acquisition or maintenance, nay, both. It would be a more specific agreement at that point. So for how I understand it, they're buying land in the county.
Oh. And I mean, to be fair, I would love to see us do some combined
parks
and money and stuff. I'm all
for it. Each one of those opportunities come up. But
yeah, I do too. I voted for Fenton too. I think, but I agree with you as one of those people who's a stickler on the MPD parks. We still are promising people. That's why I want to do the collaborations with developers going on in the future because I feel we're just going to fall behind. But I get being one of those residents who's seeing their park not being built. And then the City of Vancouver buying more property. And I mean, they have a combined development and acquisition fund now, correct? Right. So I would be a little irritated that some of those funds weren't going to park property that my neighborhood had been guaranteed.
I feel like we're stepping out of our role there. Our concern is, does this make sense for our residents? Does it make sense as a partnership? It's really not our business to tell them what their priorities
are. That's a good point.
I think it does make sense as the citizen of the city and the county that I don't agree with this analogy of going out and buying cheaper land and developing out there.
Well,
there's demand inside.
Remember, they're asking for the ability to do that, which to me means that they will use that as part of their calculation when they're PIF to justify their raising of their PIFs. Now, that's a pure speculation on my part.
I think that needs to be answered, though, before I vote.
I just want to know who owns what, who accounts for what, when our PIFs, because I think that is a backlash on us, the county, on our PIF calculations if we jointly develop a piece of property with the city and then comes back around, they go, oh, well, who... Which one of our PIF calculations does this piece of property go into? I don't know. I don't have an answer to that question. Now, we don't have an example of what they're doing either. So I mean,
they didn't have the initial piece of property they were interested.
They haven't said anything.
Is there anything right now that would prevent you if there was a property that was on the border that you could collaborate with the city in developing?
They couldn't use their PIF dollars right now.
That's
the crux of this.
And their PIF dollars are in three buckets. Ours are in six. You know, there's some issues there too.
I'm completely split. I'm like, yeah. I feel
I don't want to get in a position of squabbling over child support. You know,
would it make sense to? Have you guys look through this information?
I come up with a list of questions that are still outstanding.
We could invite Monica and Julie.
Or we could go visit them at their meeting.
Or we go visit them at their meeting. But I don't think we need to vote today. I would like to defer this vote.
Next steps that I heard from Monica are and I'll forward you guys this information, but a work session with City Council in August of this year.
Okay. It would be good for us to attend that.
This time.
If you could let us know.
Yeah.
Because I think within that realm, there'll be some straight talk.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay.
Are they going into concurrency in any specific PIF? I mean, that would be my other question.
She had brought that up originally, too. Well, that could be a possibility.
Well, I mean, same with us. possibility with us.
I think we're good till 2023.
Yeah, I was going to say,
when I first got on the board, we had
absolutely.
A couple of properties.
In PIF 10?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think it's just, you know, part of how you manage parks. And
it'll sneak up on us before we realize it.
Oh, yeah.
But you'll be on top of it before then.
Hopefully so. Hopefully so.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I was just curious. I just wanted to hear about the condition. Thinking of an example of where this would apply, there's a piece of property at the junction of Patton Parkway and 205 that is owned by the county, and it's just outside the city limits, right adjacent to the city limit, but it's outside the city limit.
What was that?
And it's owned by the county. It's a piece of property that
near Costco.
It could potentially be developed as a park. And where it's situated, it would fall within the area of the city of Vancouver, would want to spend their money in order to get benefit for residents.
Are you talking about
restrictions on it?
On the east side of Interstate 205, there's a piece of property south
side
of Patton Parkway.
That people park on Patton to get to?
It's on the south side of Patton
It's
Parkway,
right by Kurt's
Range,
just east.
It's on the city limit. And so it's just against the city limit. And it's owned by the county.
Yeah.
I think that's our mitigation property.
Yeah, it is.
Was that the one that was donated? That had restrictions on
it? But it could certainly be developed.
It's on the south side of Patton, you said?
It's on the south side of Patton.
People run there. Yeah, I think that's the Patton Greenway. There's the Patton Creek runs through there.
Yeah, and it is a mitigation site as well, but it has a big flat area that could potentially be a park. But I can see that as a property where, what if the city was to say, we want to develop a park right there, and you own the land, the county, and we want to spend money on it, what do we do?
When they do that, that's
there's
that'll
a
be
park a quarter mile to the south that you guys already own that you can develop, but
that's a good answer, baby.
Another quarter.
All right, so we'll go to the next subject as unfinished business is the Park Standards Subcommittee update. Kelsey and Jay, we'll meet update up there.
Sure. Well, we had kind of talked about talking to Kevin and how short staffed this county staff is. We're down a member, not putting a bunch of crazy new things on our plate throughout the year until a new director comes into place. Because we're talking about we could do all these things and a new director might be like, that's not my vision and not, you know, support some of the things we're putting forth. So we're trying to prioritize the parks standards as like our big project and getting prepped for the PROS plan. So one idea Jay brought up was, what if, and it's not mandatory or whatever, it's flexible based on schedule, what if we a half hour before our Friday meeting started, met for the subcommittee for the park standards? Because that's something that everyone can probably, you already have this time kind of broken up a little bit anyways, and then this way we feel like it's such a big project that we don't want a minority vocalizing their opinions. We'd like a majority of the board being able to participate. And Megan brought up, if we have more than four members meeting privately throughout the week, we're breaking open public meeting law anyways. So we would have to, if we have more than four or more people on our board who want to work on that subcommittee, we have to start publicly. It's getting more potentially complicated. So we were thinking, people who want to be on that subcommittee could meet half hour early on Fridays, kind of hammer out some of the details, and then we kind of just push through the summer on that, and then hopefully, and we might not have a lot of, again, we're trying not to put a lot on our plate because the county's short staffed right now, so we could probably make some time to also discuss it in our regular meetings as well.
That makes sense.
That
would be an ideal time.
Okay.
I definitely
yeah, that makes
agree
sense.
Doing it ahead of the meeting.
That's
a convenient time.
Yeah, I think that was all Jay, and I was like, that's a really good idea. And then that way, it'll be advertised if we have more than four people come that day. And then that kind of takes care of it.
So. Yeah, I think the key is to try to, we all have this meeting on our schedule.
Yeah.
If we did it, you and I talked about it, we had the old
totally
subcommittee,
agree.
We were doing it at the end of the meeting.
Yeah.
And I know people got kids in school and everything else. So if we did it beforehand, 30, 45 minutes, an hour, I think we can get to this building beforehand, can't we, on these meetings? Because they usually don't have any other meetings that day. We could have an open meeting that, come in, talk about it, input. I think one of the things we need to kind of be aware of, and I haven't gone through this process, you and Kelly did last time, when we do open the PROS plan, the county will hire a consultant to go to drive most of that work.
Yeah.
And so I don't want us to get too ahead of ourselves or involved there, because there's things there, but you and Kelly got the experience, so I
no, the consultants are fabulous. Bill and I already talked about, he's already got Steve Dude lined up. Or maybe that'll change with the new director. Who knows?
We have them on call. So
I like the fact that they have all this knowledge. But the other thing that Kelly and I talked about was that we were relatively new then, and we relied very heavily on them.
Sure.
But they should not be the drivers for us. We should also bring to them our concerns, because we live here. We represent our neighbors. And so there's a vision that each of us has that needs to be incorporated within that PROS plan. So we thought we'd be more proactive on the next one.
And that was part of what you wanted to accomplish here with the
Park
standards.
Yeah, well, just to find out, because that is a big issue for us. And yes, Jean, if we get her again, and I hope we do, has lived here long enough, she's got that same vision.
I can't agree with you more.
And
I like that idea of us.
So it's just a matter of being more of a collaboration this time, whereas I think on the last one, we truly did sit back and receive really good information from them. But that sense of ownership and knowing that it reflected your neighborhood, your community, wasn't 100% there.
Okay. All right, so then
we had Conservation Techniques help us with the Heritage Farm Master Plan update. And Steve and Jean did a very good job of navigating, making sure that the farm advisory team was heavily involved in that update, but also making sure that we had the community input as well, and just marrying the two together through all of the different meetings and survey information. I think we could do something very similar with this.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's the key, is we want to have that avenue, that communication line open. And if we do all want to meet, then, or those that do want to meet, let's put it that way, we can do that, 30, 45 minutes. If we open the room an hour before the meeting, give you guys time to organize and set up the meeting room.
Get the goodies
and hover
in here.
And bring
let's
in the
be
goodies
honest.
First. And then we can have that conversation. But I thought that would be better than...
I think that's an excellent idea.
Are we talking about starting this with the next meeting, or what's the...
Ideally, yeah. Yeah, we would. Just, start opening it up and start giving... And it's open. It's an open meeting. It's an open time that you can drop in and find out what's going on or participate.
It's a workshop.
It's a workshop.
I think it's important that we keep it big idea. Don't get too into the weeds, because once we start working with them, that's when we'll get into the weeds.
Yes, I agree.
Exactly.
You just got to keep it open.
Kind of like, that's such a good point. So for the public notices, we need to stretch that time out. So let's say 11:15.
We'll just say 11. 11 to 2:30, and if it starts at 11:15 or somebody's here at 11:15, that's fine.
I want to make sure, though, when it's going to the Columbian, that it talks about how, that's a workshop.
11 to 12 workshop.
At the beginning, because I don't want people coming to
11 to 12 is a workshop.
And then be like, I have to wait an hour,
I
don't want people to be mad.
That's usually
good.
Okay.
Great.
All right, great. Let's do that.
Sweet.
Are you good with that?
I am very happy with that.
Yeah. Or doing some other things, but...
Totally works better on my calendar.
All right.
All right, the DEEB subcommittee update. Again, Kelsey and Jay. Tell them when we have our...
Sure. So I emailed Temple and kind of was like, okay, we're finished with this committee, because she came to our all-PAB and saw the presentation. Could you ask the council if they're interested in hearing what we came up with? And she wrote back right away, like, I've talked to several of them. They're very interested. I'm going to try to schedule a work session. So, did you get that email from me?
No.
I forwarded it.
No.
Oh, well, the county
did you send it to the Gmail one, or?
I only have your MSN one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I forwarded, I've been trying to forward you all the invites and stuff I get from the county.
Oh, I only got just the one that said.
Mine. Did you get mine that said there might be a work session on the 26th?
No, that I have to stop and think about. I don't, I only remember, well, okay. We'll chat after and make sure I'm caught up, because I've sure been out of the loop.
Yes, I've been trying to remember to forward you every email I get from the county. So anyways, it's on June 26th. If you guys want to come, for sure at the table are the members of the subcommittee on both sides.
Well, we've invited the other side.
Yes.
Eric's acknowledged the invite, so...
Well, I must have got it because I put it on my calendar.
Okay. So, yes, the 26th, I'm sorry, I was pulling up the time, and then I put it away, 10:30, yeah. So, hopefully that, I mean, they signed the letter that talked about us compromising and what we came up with. So after Kevin sitting in on their meeting, we were a little nervous that they had maybe backtracked a little bit or had second thoughts, but I got the letter signed like within 2 hours from both Eric and Steve. So probably going in there, sitting with council, will be like, you know, look, we have a lot of ideas collaborating in the future, and those go in the pros land. And we all live happily ever after.
Well, I don't think that the councilors are so naive as to think we're going to come in agreeing 100%. But I think that they will be pleased that we have really made an effort to reach out to them.
Mm-hmm. I also have a belief that they would have been spoken to individually by other folks and that type of stuff. So anyway, so that's where we are. Again, it's very collaborative. We're moving forward. I did not attend their meeting this week. I didn't. Did anybody? Okay. Maybe we'll listen and see if anything happened with that.
They discussed the city's increase.
Oh, okay. So we're no longer the bright shiny penny. They have a new bright shiny penny to chase. Okay.
Is theirs going to be bigger than ours?
Double.
It's roughly.
It's large.
Double?
It looks like it.
What I heard is they can justify like 10,000, and I heard they're going for 6. Well, oh. Like their compromise, which is relatively the same as most of our
pretty close to us, yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, their presentation materials showed their existing compared with kind of the state. It was like statewide average. Statewide average was just above 5,000, I think. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
And we were just below the statewide average.
Why aren't we making this point either?
Yeah. And their proposal was above the statewide average.
Well, I'd like to see how they pick apart their plan and their.
Yeah, but we know you always start out asking for more than what you're realistic in expecting to get.
So just thinking about that work session, so we typically put together a PowerPoint presentation of sorts, and I know you guys already had something,
a few slides prepared. Yeah, we had a few slides.
And I don't know if Deeb is going to do their own thing. I'll reach out to the coordinator of that advisory board see what we can put together. If we want to just, it would be
combine
good, I think,
and put it together. Each of you have 3 slides or something.
Yeah.
To show that partnership.
Yeah.
Mine's pretty much just a breakdown of what they agreed to.
And what we don't agree to.
And then the sticking points we still have. But it just pretty much sums up
Eric's seen that. He watched the presentation when we were.
And he gave it to Deeb, I thought.
They showed that.
So we can ask. He's fine. I bet he'll be fine. Let's just show him.
You know, just pretty it up a little.
Well, we can talk to them and
put a few pictures on it.
I think one of the things we need to know, though, is kind of what's going on with the city scenario so that we can make sure we don't step in something.
Do you know when they're voting on their 50? If you get wind of that, will you email us and let us know? Because I might like to attend that.
Yeah.
All right. County issued email accounts. Yay, nay.
Kevin, would you mind helping me with that one?
Sure. So Megan reached out to our IT department and basically got the word back that we don't do that. We don't issue, no advisory board has county issued email addresses. Not really, I didn't see or hear any reason why they don't do it, they just don't. And they didn't seem open to going that direction. They did offer a suggestion that we establish Gmail accounts for each of you. Something to the effect of Clark County Pab 1, Clark County Pab 2 at gmail.com. Or it could be your name and then Pab or something like that. And it almost seemed like IT department was willing to help us get those established. And I'm more than willing to help push us that direction if that's what you would like to do. I don't feel like we're getting anywhere asking for the county issue email address.
Well, let me ask you another question then. My understanding that MSN accounts and...
I just set up a Gmail account and I'll just get my Gmail email out to the rest of you if you want to use that.
Well, yes, we're going to have to because the county can't seem to...
Well, I sent it to Megan already.
MSN and it won't go to Hotmail and it won't go to...
We've had many issues with the MSN related. So MSN, Hotmail, the private Outlook, all of those appear to be a problem.
But Gmail works.
Gmail works just fine. Yeah. And IT continues to send us updates that
what was interesting,
one time it was fixed and now it's not. And,
Yeah, it's interesting how it took until now for them to even let us know that that's what the issue was.
You upgraded your email.
Because as soon as I found out, I just sent Megan my Gmail account.
Okay.
I set it up for my Android phone, but I've had my MSN one for over 30 years. Why am I going to change it?
Yeah.
You know, it's got all my history in it. So I'll just set up auto so it sends it over to my MSN from there.
Yeah.
Because apparently Laura sent me some stuff and I haven't gone to look yet. I haven't gotten in the habit of going and looking at that Gmail. But yeah, if they had at least communicated that.
Well, maybe
we could have done our own. I mean, we don't need help setting up a Gmail account. And yeah, we knew because, you know, the city set up emails for us. And we just, when we started this up, we naturally assumed that they would do the same over here on this side. And yeah, they gave us the same answer back then. No,
It's a no-go, yeah.
Is your email communication open to a public record?
Yes, that's why I
asked. Yeah, so you need a separate account. You don't want your Hotmail.
Yeah.
I didn't even know about this until Holly on the Parks Board for the city told me they have city email addresses. And I was like, oh, so I don't want Arrow coming through my Gmail. Like, not that I have weird stuff in there, but
yeah, you do.
You'll know what it's called. I have a folder called weird stuff. What's that one?
Any other folder?
We don't do such high stakes things that I would assume we're not going to get public records requests. But I also just want to not have those commingled as a possibility.
Yeah, and one thing Megan and I discussed was to make it easier for records retention that we would also have whatever correspondence goes back and forth between the county and members of PAB that we copy the Parks Advisory Board email account so then there's a record internal easy for us to then
all in one place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alright, so you'll keep talking to IT if they're going to set up.
Yeah, we'll keep going that direction.
Okay.
All right. That's just one less email account I have to keep up with.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Which is fine for me. I do. All right. PAD member vacancy. Megan, you're...
That I can speak to.
Well, there you go. All right.
By way of email, 7 applicants were sent over to Jay and Kelsey for review yesterday. They're under review and to be ranked using a rubric that the Parks admin staff developed, taking information from the legal notice for the vacancy. So it's pretty straightforward, and based upon that ranking, Kevin will take forward whoever is chosen, selected, whatever. With Karen's help, we've outlined a pretty straightforward process so that it can be repeated in the years to come if needed.
The commissioners are voting. They make the decision.
They appoint.
Yeah.
So are you?
We're
going
to send the top
scoring?
Two, and we're going to score it.
Yeah.
So Kevin said other boards he's been on, usually the co-chairs score it, send the top two, and then the county council picks. I don't really have a preference. I do want to just pick brains for a second, though. It's a pretty big, diverse group.
Seems solid. Like,
did you see those? Yeah, I know.
Very impressive.
Very, very good group of
systems. Sorry.
Like, so what are we looking for as a group? We've got someone from a home builder, essentially. We have someone who served on the school board for a very long time and has recently run for office for state.
Don't want any politicians on this board.
Bye, John.
We have
Lancey of Architects and planner.
Lancey Architects, yes.
20 years experience.
Well, that sounds
good.
We've
got someone who just pretty much wrote he enjoys going to parks with his granddaughter. We have someone with a engineering background. What are we looking for? Do you want someone who's a landscape architect, someone who's in the home building industry, a politician who can maybe, you know,
navigate the waters?
Yeah, I mean, shoot some stuff at us.
So the things that hit me is, you know, regardless of their profession, somebody who can handle policy analysis, because we do a lot of policy review here, particularly with PROs coming up, probably would be good to have a wide distribution around the county as far as addresses go.
Good call.
That's the only two things I can hear right off the bat.
I do feel like the zip code thing is kind of what council used to go by. It seemed like they kind of picked people in different areas.
Which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So.
And I love the idea that we're forwarding to council some top picks, because the possibility of it becoming overly politicized with just them picking it was...
Not that that's ever happened.
Right.
This is a good problem to have, having 7 people. It's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We'll figure it out. We should do that this week, though.
Yeah.
I think people with a building background, because I know we tiptoe around that, and I just have to say, the vision that Dave brings always is an aha for me. And I don't know if we need another Dave.
I think a landscape.
Because he does a really good job at that. But I'm just saying that that is a good background to have.
I totally agree. And I found, like, I was drawn to that one, and then I saw the landscape architect.
Yeah.
And I was like, making parks standards.
Absolutely.
Change, like how valuable would she be for this big project we committed ourselves to. So it's really hard. I don't know.
It's hard.
And looking at the skills and abilities that each one of you bring and trying to find
somebody that complements those. Yeah, fills in a little bit of maybe the gaps that we don't have on the board.
That's one politician.
Yeah. So what you're saying is
we've got our politician right here.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm just curious. I had put in my name previously for vacancy, and last time I was here, Bill told me that they're just before he retired, he said they're going to send my name into the county commissioner's vacancy. But then I guess I didn't hear anything since then, so I guess there was another process that was developed.
No, I think the commissioners, I'll have to go back and verify with Bill. I believe the commissioners wanted to kick it back out and see if they get a wider. You were the only one.
Yeah.
That submitted. So they wanted to see if we get a wider pool.
Okay, so
pool
of, so I guess I can conclude the commissioners didn't want me on the list.
I'm not going to say anything to that.
There was only one application, and so they wanted to try to cast a wider net and see if we could get multiple.
I didn't know there was another time to resubmit, or was my application put in with that?
I can't speak to that. I don't know. I do know that we advertised it back out properly and all that, right?
We advertised late March and closed mid-April, and those that were put forward, the 7 were the applications that came in during that period.
I guess where I probably missed it was I thought my application was already in, and so I didn't realize there was another round that I needed to put my application in, and I was pretty busy during that time, so I didn't look for if there was another advertising or anything. So.
Well, I thought Bill had said he reached out to you a couple times, and you were still thinking on it, is what I thought Bill told me, and then you never really got back to him, is what I heard, so then we reopened it. Is what I at least remember Bill saying, but again, that was a while ago.
Yeah, well, I never heard from anybody after that last time I was here.
Things got a little crazy when Bill left. I mean, I'm not trying to use that as an excuse, but things that were in processes, like, things got muddled, so I apologize. That fell by the wayside. Can we vote to put his application in the
pool? I don't see why.
Yeah. That would seem an appropriate action to take.
Do
we still have that on file? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I think that's an appropriate action.
So I make a motion to include
your name.
Jim Robinson. application for park board.
For consideration with the other 7.
Do we have a second? All right, it's been seconded. Any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
All right.
So if you'll add that in to the pool. Okay, new business, none.
Yay, that's unusual.
It is unusual.
Well, but like Jamie said, we're not going to create new business.
No.
If there's new business that comes from the county side,
if we need to address things, we will. But until the staffing and everything gets kind of organized,
I do have one issue that I'd like to at least toss out.
Okay.
And that is the Klein Line Fishing Derby last month.
Thank you for reminding me.
There was an issue that occurred for the 2nd year in a row with the llamas being allowed in on the first day of the fishing derby they have for special needs children, and it was for 2 hours on that day with them, and it was initially denied by the county, stating and referencing a code, and then last year we at least got permission for them to attend a couple of weeks before. This year, it went right up until like 12 hours before, which was just sweating it. And thank God for some really generous contributors that they just hung in with it and didn't just say, oh, bite me, and still brought the llamas over. And it was fabulous. I've got some pictures I was going to get out on the site and then got busy, but I will do it. of the children interacting with it. It's a very positive thing. And it all came down to the county code that addresses therapy animals.
Because they're not service animals?
We ended up sending them the certification from Doug Lewis and everything to prove that these are certified therapy animals. That it's not just dogs, folks. And the question came up afterwards, and I thought it was worth asking. Is there some way we can clarify within the code so that next year when this happens, and we hope that they come back again next year, because testimonials all over the place, it was a very positive interaction. Those llamas, they wear diapers, so there's no mess, you know. The questions that were brought up, well, they're not a service animal because they're not a dog. Well, you can't change that. They're still going to be llamas. Do we need to do something within the code to ensure in the future that this frustration doesn't have to be burning up people's time and energy the way it did this year?
So Eric and I talked about this a lot, and I think both of us agree on not changing code. We want Parks Code to be open enough for interpretation. That's why we have the ability for a director to approve things and the ability to do permits for special events. So I think what happened with this time around is it was the perfect storm of people with no history. Right? Bill wasn't here anymore. I'm trying to figure this out without Bill. Our director has no history with this, and so he needed to be reassured that there were no risks and it was something that he could approve. And he even included the county manager in that decision, so that just added another layer of complexity. So I think we have the precedent set now that it's something that we can get through. I would recommend that next year for the fishing derby, when they submit they submit an application for mm-hmm. a permit,
yeah,
that they include a detailed description of llamas on this day. You know, because once we understood that it was just the day where the special needs kids were there, and the idea was...
Now you're saying on the original request for the park.
Yes. That a lot of that information, if it's included and we can show that the risks aren't there. Because I think we have people who are reviewing the permit and getting it all set up in the system who don't understand all of these details.
Okay.
Like, we're sending them across the bridge to an area of known water quality concern.
Yes.
Did they know that they wear diapers? I don't know that they knew that, right? So those are, I think, some of those things that we can just detail all of those risks and how they're being addressed in the application materials, that it's clear, and then we have this precedent already set that the director has approved them as service animals. And that's the other thing, was unclear. The intent of the code appears to be when someone needs a service animal, so whether that's a dog or a goat or a pig or whatever, I don't know. There's all kinds of service animals, but if you need a service animal in order to go to the park, then the code allows that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no animals are allowed across the bridge to climb on. So I think that was just enough.
Yeah.
Once we knew that it was specific to kids with some special needs, it was for that time period only, then I think it was easier to get there.
Okay.
Does that sound like it'll...
Yeah, I'll get back with the director.
Yeah. Comment on that, please, because I was involved with it also.
Sure.
5 weeks before the event, I was told that they were told that they would not have it even though it was on the permit. Last year, we talked about this, and like Barbara said, you know, these animals are trained, they're therapy, they go into the hospice, they go into the Hilton Hotel. When I used to volunteer for the city of Vancouver, they were there for the senior day. Right there in the movie center. So maybe you should look at what city does with that. Because the city also have them at the city park. But the whole thing is that we did specify from the beginning that it was only for one day for special needs kids for 2 hours. And they are on a leash, they have a trainer, they have specially designed diapers, and this is what they look like. It's Rogo and Froki. They've been around for many years.
So are you saying, Melata, that it was included this year on the original request?
That was my understanding, and they were told that they could not have rides. But then 5 weeks prior to the event, I had spoken to both Eric and the organizers, Al Jaffe, and all the other usual suspects out there at the Kalaimani Kids Fishing Organization. And of course, the Latin American Association partners with them, so we're involved with it every year. So don't tell me there was no history there with them being here.
I don't have history, Melata.
I don't have history. That's not what I'm talking about.
And our director and our county manager know nothing about this.
And
we found out 2 weeks before the event, and we did the best that we could, and we got them in.
Melata, I think what we're trying to do here, dear, is pave the way for next year and future.
Right.
And I would really like to work with you offline on this, and we will ensure that we have a smooth trail for next year. Is that the best solution? I think it is.
Well, but then you need some information also from Bill to work on that.
And I will. I just made a commitment to get that.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go through there. I'll save the other stuff for the round table.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin, we're you want to give a manager?
I just want to say, we were glad that you fought it to the end.
Yeah.
I want to give you kudos for that. Because you were walking in shoes in a temporary assignment, and that's not easy to do.
Nope. All right, so we'll do the manager's report. Kevin, you want to update us?
Okay, update on Moulton Falls Trail. So, Councillor Lent scheduled a meeting last week, a phone conference with members of DNR, and I found out later that she actually didn't initiate the conference call. It was the woman that came and spoke to you guys a couple of times, and several folks that are working with her from Trout Unlimited and Fish First and a few other organizations. So there were members of Department of Natural Resource and all of these community people, and then some folks from the county involved in the conversation. And we basically discussed different strategies to try to get the entire Unit 1 of the Michigan Trotter timber sale transferred to the county. And there was lots of great discussion. And I think where we ended is the number one strategy that the state is going to look into is, so the state owns two types of properties. One is common school trust, the other is the general county trust. So those are properties that the county used to own, but counties weren't able to manage forested properties, and so the state holds them in trust and manages them for the counties. So this particular property is a common school trust property. And if it were one of those county properties, there would be an easier way to transfer it back to county ownership. It's called reconveyance. So what the state is going to look into is a interagency transfer where they would take property from the school trust and property from the county trust and do a swap, a like for like, so that neither, if they do it right, that neither trust loses out. And then once that property is in the county trust, then they can reconvey it to Clark County, the entire unit. lots to figure out if that's even going to work and if everybody in DNR will support it. You know, they have to talk to the school districts because of the common school component. So that's kind of the number one thing that everybody's looking at. We did find out also that the trust land transfer was is not in the budget moving forward. I don't think that the legislature's finished with the budget yet and the governor hasn't signed it, but as of right now, our proposal is not in there anymore. So it's not funded. So absent of anything happening there, we would, the next alternative would be we resubmit a trust land transfer for the whole timber unit, but that wouldn't be considered until 2021 at the soonest. DNR has committed to not pursue the logging, the timber sale for at least the next year while we work through some of these ideas. And then we were also asked to look at, are there any properties that the county owns that could that we could trade, we could do a land swap that would be a like-for-like value? And Pat Lee and I looked at that recently, and we don't feel like there is. A lot of our large forested properties are A, Camp Bonneville, or B, were transferred to us from the state previously, or C, purchased from grant money, and so not eligible for a land swap. But we committed to at least look into it. And then we're also asked to look at what potential grant opportunities there might be out there, and then if Conservation Futures could potentially purchase it. And we know the answer on Conservation Futures is we have 10 projects with a $7.3 million bond that are active, approved by council. We know that those may or may not work out the way we had hoped, and so there will be a potential opportunity to come back to council with another list to replace projects that have fallen through, or we were able to purchase at lower than what we thought the market value was, that kind of thing. And potentially this one could be on that list. I think that's something that we would bring to you guys again and then bring back to council. Right. But so that's kind of a little bit further down the road.
To clarify, we preserved the view shed on the trail.
For a year.
Well, so DNR, in conversations that I have had with DNR, they have committed to not logging within 200 feet of the trail.
Okay.
Yeah, that was already
a really plan. It sounds like ever. Whether they...
Well, yeah, because of the landslide danger.
Right. It was the landslide danger. It was the... they're not concerned about the landslide danger.
Well, they should not be.
They're concerned about the public perception and making sure that people have this trail experience. They've heard from a lot of people, and that's important to them. So through that public process, they feel like we're committed to buffering the trail.
And that was for aesthetics, but I guess my concern is more the landslide danger, which, from what she was saying, extends beyond the 200-foot buffer.
But if you remember, DNR's person said it doesn't.
Right.
So it's just a matter of...
Until they have their geotech, which they haven't had. They've had biologists and watershed people with an opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to know.
Yeah. So me personally, for the good of Clark County citizens, I am all behind preserving the view shed on the trail. Yeah. I'm not comfortable using Conservation Future money to preserve someone's view shed from their property. Because I don't think that's not for the greater good of Clark County. That's serving a couple of specific lands.
Yeah, and these DNR lands have great uses. I mean, the funding that comes out of them, there's a purpose for this.
Well, and I totally agree with you on the view. You know, the view is nice.
Yeah.
And it's most critical where it gains for more people. But when I read through that, I guess my biggest concern was the protection. Because if that land slides down, it does more than ruin the view.
They do not have a geotech look at it yet.
Yeah.
They've had a biologist.
And they need to do that.
Is that, are you speaking of DNR?
No.
It's their opinion.
They've had
it can slide today without any logging. So, I mean, there's always risk, even if geotech says, it's a risk reward. So,
yeah.
It is what it is.
They've had a gentleman from Fish First looked at it, who's a retired hydrologist, not geologist.
Yeah. It, just FYI, I had a half-hour conversation with the woman,
Linda.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, and I stated several times, from my own perspective, not speaking on Pab's part, that if they really want, if she really wants this to be a Pab issue, A, I need geotech, and B, I would really prefer it coming from the county commissioners, because this is just not.
Yeah. And all the credit to her. She is taking every avenue that she can find.
She's everywhere. She has talked to the commissioners.
She has.
She's talked with everybody. Yeah. All the way up. I don't know that. I don't think she's gone to the governor's office yet. But she's. I mean, she's been.
Yeah, she tried. But yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah. Okay, what else is inclusive playground?
So I don't remember what we were going to talk about with inclusive playgrounds. What did we discuss?
Yes, we won.
Yes, we won. We're working on Phyllida.
Well, if you were blocked, did you ever get those emails from me with the inclusive playground information from Ridgefield?
Yeah, I got those.
I got it from Laura.
Yes.
Yes, you got them. Yes. Okay.
Sure that I have it.
Yeah. So I believe the overall concept was we were going to have a discussion or a presentation from Inclusive and then from the other playground vendor company, and I can't remember their
Something
name.
Local.
The two locals, so that we can better understand when we go into our park standards discussion, better understand capabilities and issues on either side. I think part of we've gotten a little bit derailed from that when we, the lady from, gosh, I'm so bad with names. And Ridgefield, I think it was, or someplace.
Marie?
No, it wasn't Marie. It was the other lady that was talking about the at the All-Pab where they had the park, where they had the stream running through it.
Oh, Sandra. Sandra Day.
Oh, Sandra Day?
Yeah.
Salmon Creek, wasn't it? Was it Salmon Creek or was it somebody? They have a park and they have kids playing on stumps in the middle of streams and they have some signs, but... And we were all talking about liability, and they said, yeah, we know there's some liability, but we have signs up. And I don't know if that'll protect
anybody.
The
one that's down in that ravine that she was talking about.
Oh, that was Ridgefield.
Yeah.
Okay, Ridgefield.
They've got that in Abrams Park, that creek that runs through.
Right. So
I always keep kids away from it.
So I think that was kind of diluted our thoughts. In that we were kind of focused on inclusive and playground structures, and then we heard about these others and kind of thought, okay, well, wait a minute, maybe we can make it more natural, or, you know, how would you make that inclusive, or what part of that could you make in an inclusive park? So, but I still think our program, we probably need to talk about this on the agenda, is to get the representatives of inclusive playgrounds to come and present, and then the other...
I think anything innovative that we can get people to come and give a speech on would be beneficial.
And I think that'd be part of our park standard discussion, actually, in research. Yeah. So,
I thought someone was going to make an outreach to that one company that Kelly mentioned. I can't remember the name of it.
Cascade.
Downtown.
Cascade something, yeah.
He said they were local and they did.
Columbia Cascade Company. Yeah.
Okay. Are they the ones that are helping with the Phyllida?
Yes, they were the ones that designed the rainbow.
Oh, okay.
But they gave us, very reasonable amount. Then when it was given to the contractor that the county gave it to, all of a sudden it just blossomed out. So there's a caveat, because when they worked with us, they were made reasonable and extremely helpful.
Oh, and then when they came to the county, they thought deep
pockets. So we don't know what happened if the county's contractor was charging more than what they
Oh, were they adding on?
Were they a subcontractor to the county? Okay. Well, that's something we can look at, too.
Yeah.
So, all right, Columbia Cascade, and then the
Illinois. So we can, we can work to get something set up at one of the upcoming meetings.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And I think the thought was have one come in 1 month and one come in the other month.
Don't want them together.
Yeah, we do. We want them to fight for
our business.
That's all right.
Okay, so other stuff that's going on. And so just kind of an update on development projects. So Phyllida, you mentioned, is The parking lot and the children's garden are, we've combined into a single project, and we're this close to submitting for permits for the site plan review process.
And that's really needed. I was down there the other day for soccer practice. There was not a parking spot available.
We're going to ask about opening that vacant lot for...
So we can just park on the dirt. That's better than
so
nothing.
For a temporary occupancy. Once we get through the preliminary site plan review process to have that as an approval. I don't know if it's possible, but we're going to ask. And then Hawkinson Park is going through the fully complete review process with the county. We should get a notice that we're fully complete any day now, and then it's however long it takes after
for
that.
For disc golf?
Yes.
When do you, I just got asked this by someone from the county, when do you expect that to be open? Is it end of summer?
So another thing that we're doing, and it's related, is because we currently don't have a parks manager, I'm trying, doing my best, but we also don't have, so we have Bill's vision of things, and we need to make sure that our director is comfortable with the things that are in play and moving those forward. And so what we've been talking about, and we set up a meeting on the 17th, of this month, is to present all of those projects to our director to show them scope, schedule, budget, and major issues. You know, one of the biggest things that we're facing on Hawkinson is the expense of trying to get people from the subdivisions. That was one thing that Bill added in, is trying to get people from those new, like, Urban Oaks and the other subdivisions into the park on that other side. And it's challenging. So
let's just put that disc golf in first and then deal with it.
That's what we're talking about.
I'll tell you, I get asked all the time from people that want to play that course.
So we're talking about a phased development potentially, and leaving the access improvements as sort of a phase two down the road, and move that, because we've been talking about it for too long. We need to get it moving.
Yeah, I just had someone bring me like the decision from council or whatever from like 16 or something.
Yeah.
They're like, why don't we have this yet?
Right.
It's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah, it should have been here, but you're right. So we're doing that with all the current parks projects. That includes the lower Daybreak improvements, Camp Hope, and Curtin Creek Community Park, and Cozy Camp. So Cozy Camp is under contract and starting design process. Curtin Creek, we're struggling with the consultant to get under contract, and if we can't do that soon, we will go to the next one on the list. So those are all starting to move forward. Whipple Creek Grist Mill is shown here in a picture. So sure all of you know Anita Wills.
Yep.
She has come to the county with a proposal to repair the grist mill. A cost estimate from Mason of $26,000. You can see the description there of essentially making it she's not talking about making it function again. She's talking about maintaining it in place and making it safe, because right now it's a hazard. So we either need to fix it or demolish it. And so so she's proposing the use of some funds. There are funds available in from the Parks Foundation, donations that she has helped pursue that covers about half of the cost. And the other half of the cost would come from money that was that the Columbia Land Trust holds for this property, that was donated as part of the acquisition of the property back in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. So they.
There's no money from historical grants or anything?
Well, so here's the difficulty with that grist mill: is it was built in the 60s. So it's not like the Cedar Creek grist mill that was, you know, built 150 years ago and is a historic resource. It was built by the landowner in the 60s as a fun thing to do, maybe. You know, I don't know.
But it's kind of a neat feature for the property, and so I think that's been really striving to save it.
It's going to be an ongoing maintenance expense too.
Right. So she presented this to Karen Llewellyn, and I wanted to bring it to your attention. Was kind of looking for, because in order to spend the money, we have to write a letter that says we're asking Columbia Land Trust to give the money towards this project. And I felt like it should be something that Parks Advisory Board should weigh in on.
This money, this $13,000 from Columbia Land Trust could be used for other things on that property? Like maybe we're putting in a new parking lot or something?
Yeah. So the initial letter that documents the money coming, and this was when we were Vancouver Parks, it says, that the money's there to develop improvement plans for the property, possibly including trail work, repairs to the pond and mill, and or recreational facilities, such as a ball field. So that's
pretty open.
I think it's a money pit, so I am not in favor of it, but
if it were super old, I think that would convince me.
It is Cedar Creek, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So I don't know if you would like Anita to come in and speak to you guys about it, and then we can make, you can put her on new business, have her come in,
yep,
give you her.
Yeah, I think that's the best approach for right now.
Okay.
Let's do that.
And
that
then we can, and you can take a vote to support
her. We get
not
a better feel for what her goal is.
Okay.
Give us a chance to go out and ask some of the residents what
right.
they think.
Right.
Do and they go there? Do they enjoy it? Do they see a value in maintaining it?
Right.
Who would pay for the ongoing maintenance cost?
And we would,
yeah.
Essentially.
I mean, that's...
Well, it's sort of as it is now. It's our property. We would be beholden.
We pay for either fixing it up, and or they get money to fix it up, and we maintain it, or we knock it down.
I see it as the same as a lot of these structures that, you know, for some reason, we've been saving some of them that don't seem worth saving.
Yeah.
And that's my opinion, but I'd love to have her come and speak about it.
And I see your point, but I have not been there and enjoyed the gristmill. I have gone to the other one, the old one, et cetera, and kids love that, but this isn't functioning.
No, it's not functioning.
It would only make it safe to look at.
Right now it is a liability.
I want to go and ask a few other people, do you go there? Is there
structurally unsafe right at the moment?
Yeah.
And the proposal would fill it in, and so the long-term maintenance may be limited if it's anchored and filled in. But I don't know.
A big picture hanging someplace would be to suit the same purpose in my mind.
And that's where it beholds us to ask others to actually go there.
I think it'd be great for her to come in and present her case.
Okay. So we can get that set up for next
time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we've also talked about putting some extreme biking trails in there. And we've got a really large population that's been asking for that.
The whole comment section at the end of the PROS plan is asking for mountain biking trails.
I know.
Yeah.
So it's not that I don't see the value in this.
Yeah.
Look at that money and see.
It's balancing
where it. Where does it benefit a majority of the county? I feel like more people would use more money for trails there than they would to preserve a gristmill. Probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's what a lot of the money so far has been spent on trail improvements.
Right.
And Anita, to her credit, has been very involved in that property. Amazing.
I still think she should go to the historic board because, I mean, you're still talking about an 80-year-old structure.
Yeah.
That's
true.
I think it still technically qualifies as historic.
The 1960 date, is it 63?
And this is anecdotal, so I have to confirm that.
I mean, I know we have to look at buildings as if it's pre-1963. It could be a national, so you have to go to SHPO to kind of get a review.
I mean, SEPA's only 45 years or 35 years or something.
I think 45, so within the next 5 years, it could be considered historic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Will do.
Yes.
I had a couple other things on my list.
Okay.
If you guys are interested. Camp Bonneville. And I think I talked about this last month, that the idea of an advisory committee or a working group, council decided to take a pause, take a time out. And what they're hoping to do is take a really strategic look at Camp Bonneville and how it could be developed and how it could be paid for. And so they've asked to start the process of hiring some consultants to develop various concept plans, and with the idea being to kind of frame the boundaries of what's feasible and then start to include various stakeholders, general public, some form of an advisory committee. So I've started working on a request for qualifications, and it was kind of a two-step process where we would evaluate consulting firms based on this request for qualifications, come up with a smaller list, and then do a request for proposals where we then ask them for concept plans. And then based on those concept plans, take it another step further and do hire somebody to do the actual master plan process. That's where we are. In the next month, I hope to be able to.
Were we going to fund those concept plans? I can't remember. I know we were looking both ways.
That's still the idea, is to throw a little bit of seed money at.
You almost have to if you're going to do it that way, because then you own it and you can make your decision as you see fit.
Hire four or five firms to do that, throw $10,000 to $15,000 at them. The money would come out of the timber fund, so
it's good
way of doing that. And then the other thing was, I'm not sure if we've talked about homeless camps recently.
Not at the board level,
no. Okay. So Bill was working on this a little bit here and there as he had time. Since he's gone, I guess that means I get to. And we've had... Before he left, we had some discussions with Lindsay Schaefer in council's office. It comes up frequently because we see them more frequently. People complain about it. We have to address it. How do we clean it up? How do we keep people safe? Is there a way that we can help people that need help? That kind of thing. So we've been working on a policy at the county level, which we don't currently have. A countywide policy on how do we handle, what's our enforcement proceedings, you know, how do we clean them up? Should we allow camps in certain situations? That kind of thing. So we're working on that right now. Amanda's involved. Several in the attorney's office are involved. Community services is, we're hopefully having them involved in the discussion as well. Our safety people, our risk people, just across the board, trying to gather input on how to do this. And then we'll be bringing it to council in the near future. And the only reason, I think, one of the main reasons that Parks is involved is because that we see them a lot.
Yeah.
And it becomes a difficult situation to navigate. So if you are passionate about it and want to be involved, let me know. I would welcome the help.
Okay.
If you just want to hear updates, that's fine too. I don't have anything else unless you guys have questions about anything.
I have one question. On the back here on the event, I don't see the Park Foundation luncheon.
Yes.
Do we have a table for us?
I was going to bring it up.
Yeah, she told us we reserved with Megan.
We got a table, right? So.
Well, she said send the RSVP, so I don't know. It's not on here, so I didn't know if we for sure had a table or not.
Yes,
we do.
Okay.
So, yes, table, it's next week.
It's next Tuesday.
Tuesday.
I have a draft email at my
office that I intend to send out this afternoon, just providing an update on location and parking and
time and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. We will be receiving one grant for playground equipment at Vancouver Lake. And it's not very big, but something.
Hey, something.
Right, yeah. And then Bill's going to join us.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
I invited him as a celebrity guest. And he said he's not a celebrity, but he'll come anyway. Okay. And he said he's lost 20 pounds.
Oh,
oh my
goodness. We may not recognize him.
Yeah.
All the traveling.
I think it's awesome. Yeah.
No stress eating.
Yeah. So it'll be good to see him. And then Laura will be receiving an award.
That's right.
Whoop, whoop.
It's the Awesomeness Award or something like that. I don't remember the name of it. But.
Let's hope they lighten them up. Because mine is a big piece of granite, this big. I use it as a doorstop. Literally.
So, yeah, next Tuesday we'll see you guys.
Get up there. 20 pounds.
Good. Good. Okay, we'll go around the table for a round table. Start with you, Dave. Anything extra? Anything different? Okay. Haylen?
I got nothing.
Barbara, you got nothing? I don't have anything either.
I have a quick thing. I'm working with Jennifer on our board for Vancouver School District on the inclusive play area at Lakeshore Elementary. And I'm learning a lot about playground insulation and how expensive everything is. So hopefully I'll learn a lot to bring to the discussion of the park standards and our push towards more inclusive play. But it's a lot more complicated than I thought and takes a lot more permits and steps than I thought. And I still can't get over how expensive the locking black
tiles
are.
Yeah.
But that is just cruel that they're that expensive. Yep. Anyway, that's my biggest
Is it more expensive than the pour in place rubberized surface, or is that
yes. just any sort of hard surfacing, like for kids with disabilities to get to play surfaces? It's just ridiculous and gross how expensive it is. Yeah. And anyways, that's my rant for the day. It shouldn't be that expensive.
It shouldn't.
It's cruel that. So anyways, I'm hoping to learn a lot. Jennifer's so smart and so good at that stuff that I'm hoping I learn a lot from her to bring to the table.
She just went through 16 of them, so
she seems a little frazzled right now with all the bond stuff and
all the schools that they're trying to get built for next year. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all.
Okay. With that, I think we're adjourned.
It's a wrap.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Look, we did it at 2.
Yeah. All right. Mark that on the calendar.